Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody. It's just Matt and I today on Shift and Steer, but it's still going to be good because we've got a lot of great stuff.
Well, and, maybe.
Well, there won't be as much laughing. There won't be as much laughing. But we're going to talk about a $42 million apartment, flat, in London that was influenced by an automobile. And we're going to tell you bad news about the Indy 500. And we're going to tell you about how the auto industry, the tech industry, everything's converging together. Is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? But one thing I can ensure you of is it's going to be a good show because it's brought to you by...
Yeah, our friends at Geico. Did you know that right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you guys waiting for? You should go in there and check it out. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico than now. You'll save an extra 15% if you switch by October 7th. So visit geico.com to learn more.
Hey, 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 this is NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis. I'm excited to announce the launch of my new podcast, Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast. I'll be talking with friends, family members, old teammates, athletes, celebrities, moguls, and guess what? I'll be talking to you. Listen, this is all in the search for everyday greatness. So I'm asking you to come along with me on this ride. Download new episodes of Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast, every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on PodcastOne.com. It's not what you have. It's what's inside of you that actually inspires greatness.
Racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjoy, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
I know you had some stuff sort of queued up, Brad, for the automotive news, but the buzz is circling around the new... a supercar from Gordon Murray. Gordon Murray, very famously from F1 and the McLaren F1. He was a designer and engineer for Formula Racing. He did some pretty cool, innovative stuff in that world, but then came out with the McLaren F1, the three-seater supercar. We all know Leno has one, and Leno was on the show recently. I think with Adam Carolla telling about how he wanted the car, and I forgot when, 2004 or something like that, or whatever. And the car was 2000. The car was already a few years old, and I'm like, we have one, and it's new. It's 850,000, and Leno was like, yeah, but it's 4 years old already. Like, why would I pay full sticker? And they're like, well, you know, that's the price if you want it. And he's like, I tell you what, I'll call you back in 2 weeks. If you don't sell the car, I guess I'll get it. And then he called back and they're like, yeah, we still have it, but we do have a customer coming in that's going to come in and buy it. And he's like, all right, I'll just take it. And that's the black F1 that he had that he basically bought for a sticker. And now, I don't know, was it worth 20 million bucks? I don't know where the McLaren F1s are, but Gordon Murray was, always into aerodynamics and always into lightweight, minimal packaging. He put Did you see the fan? He had like a fan on the back of the of a racing car.
Yeah.
And but it had like heavy side skirts, and it was basically meant to sort of suck the car down. And it was a very innovative idea, but very rudimentary at the time. So Gordon Murray,
I mean, 50-year career, man. I mean, you know, he's been around for, you know, doing it.
Yeah, so take a look at this car. It's called the T50. It's from Gordon Murray Designs or Gordon Murray Automotive. I guess he's got a couple of companies underneath the underneath the umbrella of his brand.
Gordon Murray Supercar, and that thing will come up. So.
Yeah, it'll come up. And here's a few things I'll tell you about it. It's one, lightweight was the goal from day one. He didn't want the car to be more than 1,000 kilograms. It had to be under 1,000 kilos. That was the point. And I think it came in at like 980 done, which is 2,174 pounds, 2,175 pounds.
I was going to ask you to convert that for me.
Yeah, it's less than 2,200 pounds. The thing basically weighs as much as like a Miata or something. It's about the size of a Porsche Boxster. So when you start seeing the photos and you start seeing the center seat, because it is a three-seater, again, you sit in the middle, you got passengers to your sides, set back a little bit. It's still not a very big car.
And it's low, too. I mean, this thing is down, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty badass. The engine, I love this idea. First of all, he wanted to make a proper supercar, you know, just a proper sports car supercar. And in the traditional sense, he wants it to be the best driving car. And it doesn't necessarily need to be the fastest car. And it's interesting because in his presentation that he did with Dario Franchini, who hosted it with him, the question came up of, what's the 0 to 60? He literally said, I don't know the 0 to 60 of this car and I don't care. But he teamed up with Cosworth made, I believe a bespoke for this car, 3.9 liter V12, naturally aspirated. So a small displacement V12, naturally aspirated, 654 horsepower, 344 pound-feet of torque, red line is 12,100 RPM. So at peak power is at 11,500 RPM. This thing must sound amazing. It's a high revving motor, yeah.
This is like F1. I mean, this is, you know, it's got to sound wicked.
So the peak torque comes in at 9,000 RPM. Apparently, it's the lightest V12 ever, at least in a road-going car. It's 392 pounds for the entire engine, which is incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And 3.9 liters. It packs in 164 horsepower per liter, and it's backed with just a proper traditional 6-speed manual transmission. You row the gears in this car. There's no paddle shift, no dual clutch, like, you know, paddle shift deal. The clutch itself, I couldn't actually speak to it. I'm sure it's some sort of multi-piece, small, you know, it's got to be a very, very small diameter clutch, the crazy RPM. Now, when you start getting into the aerodynamics of the car, you'll look at the car, and Brad, when you look at that car, you'll see a little bit of McLaren F1.
Definitely,
you'll see a little bit of, I would say, a little bit of Vector, a little bit of XJ220 Jaguar in it. And what I mean by that is no crazy wings, no crazy canards, no over-the-top splitters, none of that stuff. What he did was, and what he's claiming is one of the most aerodynamically efficient cars, the wind travels over the car, travels through the car, and then when you swing around to the back, you will see this fan on the back. And you read about the aerodynamics of some supercars, and they say, hey, at 180 miles an hour, you could drive the car upside down, like if you were in a tunnel, because the downforce exceeds the weight of the car, right? So they're saying, hey, the faster you go, the more aerodynamic, the more efficient, the more, you know, not necessarily more efficient, but you know what I'm saying? Like it improves the aerodynamics and increases the downforce.
It makes it stick to the road.
it makes it stick to the road. Now, what he's done is he's put this fan on the back that when the fan activates, it pulls air through the car, through all of these ducts, essentially simulating high speed downforce. So you can artificially create downforce on this car by use of the fan. So instead of saying, hey, this car has crazy downforce, 180 miles an hour, and I don't know what the exact specs are, but you could say at 87 miles an hour, it has the downforce that most supercars have at, I don't know, 140.
In effect, he's made his own wind tunnel.
He has.
Yeah, he's created his own wind tunnel that travels with him.
Apparently, there's like 50% more downforce that he can create with this thing. And through different valves and things opening and ducts opening and throughout the car, he can increase downforce and reduce drag on the fly. And there's a VMAX boost mode. It streamlines all the settings and takes advantage of a 48-volt electric starter generator power system for the fan. And it reduces load basically on the engine as well by use of this fan when it kicks in. So it's the equivalent of 690 horsepower, but he's doing this basically electronically and through aerodynamics. So there's no turbos, there's no like temporary turbo boost, there's no electric motor on the front wheels. It's rear wheel drive. Just by going to this VMAX boost mode using the high volt system, and I'm sure it's way more scientific than what we're explaining here, but just really, really cool stuff. Of course, the underpinnings, double wishbone suspension, all four corners, forged aluminum components. Now we've driven some supercars that have just massive brakes, carbon ceramic brakes, and it seems to be becoming competitive now to like who has a 16-inch rotor, you know, like the Lamborghini Urus SUV, 16 and a half. Well, even as a carbon ceramic rotor, that still adds weight, right? And everything on this composites. Car,
yeah,
everything on this car was planned with weight reduction in mind. Everything was. It wasn't like they built the car, had to fill some certain needs, and then they said, how do we cut the weight of that? Everything was designed from the ground up with weight reduction. So it has 6-piston Brembo calipers up front, 14.5-inch rotors, because that's all they need for this car with this weight, right? 6-piston, 14.5 is massive, but they don't need more than that. And it's got a 4-piston in the rear with 13.4. inch rotors in the back. It's got forged aluminum center lock wheels on it. Why use 5 lugs when you can use 1 large lug?
Yeah, there's a lot of engineering that went into this, and there were a lot of guys with slide rules calculating and figuring out, you know, what could be used to save weight.
If you look at a picture of the interior and you see the pedals, you know, aluminum floor mounted, drilled out, I believe the clutch and the brake pedal are aluminum and the gas pedal is titanium. and the engine has quite a bit of that as well. I believe aluminum block and heads, titanium rods, valves, just everything they could.
It has to be if it weighs that 300.
Yeah, 392 pounds. Just not just the high revving benefits and the heat and everything else, but also the overall weight reduction. So, yeah. Pretty cool. And traditional F1, if you got an F1 like Leno does, the seat didn't move. A little like the modern day Ford GT, the seat doesn't move, but the entire cluster does. When you buy one of these cars, you go and get fitted with it. And it's funny, I was doing the other show with Goldberg, and he's like, oh, the car's so tiny, maybe I can't fit in it. And I was like, actually, this may be one of the few cars you actually can really fit in it. It's got more shoulder room than you could possibly imagine because it's got 2 people sitting on the sides, right?
So, and you're you know, a little bit positive of them.
Yeah, and at $3.08 million, I'm sure they'll modify the seat to fit his big ass in there, right? So, and then if they can get, you know, his height and width in there, I was like, look, you're going to have to climb over one of the seats to get in there, and everyone's going to have to do that anyway, but that's part of the allure of the car.
It's just when he's steering and he's beating the piss out of his passengers with his big arm.
Yeah, hitting him with his elbows and stuff. But exactly. Anyway, this car seems badass. I'd love to get some driving impressions at some point on the car. I don't know who's going to be able to test it. I think they're limiting production to about 100 units. There are still some available. I think people did pre-orders, but either they limited pre-orders or some people were waiting to see what this really was going to be before it happened. As far as I know, Bruce Canepa may be the exclusive distributor in the United States for this car. And I'm sure that means he's got his people trained up or will get trained up on how to maintain the car, how to fit you in the car and do the seat adjustments and all that stuff. So now it's Bruce Canepa. We love Bruce Canepa. I don't know if that means you buy the car for sticker and he continues to make money off of maintenance and fitting and resale and whatever, or is the car $3 million and you call Canepa and he says it's six. Yeah. Like, who knows? Who knows what the dealer markup is on this car? But
the market will bear. But the yeah. big question is, Matt, that if this fan system is successful and it really proves to work just how it says, will other manufacturers, start, adding to it? And how we saw wings go from a little wick up to these giant wings, are we going to see, giant fans on the back of supercars and probably because of patents and like that, people yeah. will have other ways of creating the same type of, a wind induction, and it'll be interesting right. to see how it happens.
I agree with you. I think I'm almost positive that the fan thing has to be patented. Plus he did it a million years ago.
Yeah.
So he probably already had some amount of IP, secured for that, but we are already seeing on a lot of cars and now being trickled down to just things like Ford F-150s, new trucks and stuff, that the new versions of grills opening and closing when you don't need mm-hmm. a lot of air coming in and out, and Aventador having the rear scoops open and close, and the new is it Avisia, the McLaren Roadster with no windshield.
Right.
And it looks all super sleek, but when you're driving, it has a windbreak come up and it kind of kicks out, which is actually interesting because it's a cool looking car. But when you see with the windbreak coming up, it looks stupid. it looks terrible. It's just like a wall that pops up right off the front of the grill.
Yeah, I know. But it's ways of manipulating that air over the car. So, yeah. I mean, everything's changing. The computers have allowed manufacturers to do so many things, from, as you said, a pickup truck with a grill that opens and closes to very, complicated and intriguing ways of, pulling that air through. One of the other things that's really changing in the world is we're just seeing the whole world of the automobile industry changing with Tesla. Their mm-hmm. stocks have just kept going up, and they keep doing more and more. But what we're seeing is that other companies coming after them, and one in particular is Nikola. And Nikola said they were coming out with their truck. They're coming out with also spoke about a semi-truck type of a thing. They went public. Their very first public their 10K came out and they showed a 16% drop in stock prices. And that almost that golden little halo around Tesla that everybody yeah. thought would go on to all the other manufacturers. There's something about Tesla, man. It's I don't know if it was because he was the first or just because he's a good buddy of yours or what, but it has this power, And the other companies aren't yet realizing that just mystique that Tesla has.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because I know they thought Nikola was going to just benefit very, you know, very widely from their public offering, and they've seen a real big fall off with their first quarterly results.
It's kind of tough to go public with a company that's already losing money and hasn't really released a product yet. That all being said, they went out at a massive valuation of like $13 billion and in a pretty big stock price. I mean, they're trading at, I don't know, $36 a share. Do we know what they opened up at?
What their initial offering price was? I don't.
Yeah,
but they raise an incredible amount of money. And there's other companies out there. You know, there's several of them that we could, you know, track and trace and look at. And, you know, Rivian, you know, I mean, my goodness, I get emails every day from Rivian with a list of like 20 to 40 positions that they're trying to fill. You know, we're hiring for, and I mean, it's just continual. And you just go, how many people do they have over there? You know, but it's amazing. But we'll have to see where it goes.
Rivian is the one that everybody's keeping an eye on. They seem to have some great tech. They have some pretty good design. They've done many rounds of fundraising, and they've done what we like to call good quality money. They, you know, they've got investments from Ford,
GM,
and Ford. I don't know about GM. They've got investments from Ford and from Amazon and some from several other people. And the way we understood it was, when we see an all-electric F-150, where the hybrid's been announced, the electric F-150 will be homebrewed from Ford, but any potential Lincoln brands, like a Lincoln SUV hybrid, would be largely based off of Rivian tech. Now, I'm not sure if that's still the case. We'll find out. But the company is interesting in that, of course, Amazon's investment in it also guarantees some level of success for them, because Amazon said, hey, yeah, they're like, hey, we're gonna invest hundreds of millions of dollars in you, and then also we're gonna place an order for 100,000 trucks that you're gonna build for us. And so it's a little bit of a return on their investment. It's a smart move for them to own a piece of the company. I'm sure Rivian was at a point where they're like, hey, we're not going to sell you the company, but we're happy to do a deal with you. And I think it's great. And I don't even know where the trucks are. They're not even starting to, I don't know if they're building them or when they're going to be delivered, but Amazon's running commercials for them.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's really interesting. Like I said, I'm getting these emails daily about, I mean, they are just hiring so many people, and which is, again, in direct opposition to Tesla. Tesla runs pretty lean and mean. And in today's world, I don't know. I you know, it'll be interesting to see. I'm not casting my opinion either way, but, you know, the amount of people I see that they're hiring or the positions they're trying to fill, it seems so much like old Detroit where you've just got layers and layers of people.
But this is the difference between them and many other companies is they potentially have a guarantee on some sales.
Yeah.
When somebody comes in and says, we want hundreds of thousands, you know, we want 100,000 trucks, they know they have some sort of some revenue that's going to be coming in, right? So they can hire up against that revenue.
As opposed to
just raising money, hiring up based off that raise, and then how long it sells to sell. Like, that's part of so many of these startup company issues, right? Is, you know, that's why companies are like, give us the deposits, you know, we'll gladly, you know, pay you on Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Exactly. It's, hey, we're going to do a GoFundMe, and someday we're going to get you that product. So anyways, hey, let's talk Indy. Indianapolis. Indianapolis has seen, now they've become like, they always were the hub of racing and everything, but NHRA basically the whole season is in Indy right now. It's like, yeah, we're going to be at Indy this week, and we're going to be at Indy next week. And then comes the big one that we have every year at Indianapolis. And the reason for that is because they were able to have people come out to the races. The state would let them, as long as they had social distancing, they had masks. And then Mecum Auctions did their auction, did huge numbers there. I mean, they sold a Mustang for, what was it, 3.2
million? 3.85, the 10 miles Mustang, yeah.
And so, you know, the money was there, the people were there. And then comes the Indy 500, August 22nd, or excuse me, 23rd. And they had discussed, we talked about it on a previous show, that 25% capacity they would allow in and really distance the people out. Well, I think they are suffering because of all these NHRA, Mecum, and everything else that's going on, because now their COVID rates have tripled in that county. And so they're having to pull way back, and they've announced that the Indy 500 will still have qualifying. They'll still have, you know, all of that and the event, but there will not be any spectators at all.
Yeah, no fans allowed. I don't know what the COVID rates are or the cause of the COVID rates. I don't think Mecum Auction is to blame.
No, I'm not. I'm using those as motorsports examples.
Yeah.
Because, Matt, I have relatives that live in Indy, and yeah. It's like, man, there's nothing going on here. We're out at the bars. We're going to the this, the that. Every event was still happening there. And then on top of it, talking to all my relatives, they're like, oh, yeah, we went to Miami for vacation. I go, Miami? That's like the worst place. And my other one said, oh, we went to Atlanta. I'm like, going, then they bring it all home because Everybody there was just like, yeah, nothing happening. It's all good. And that all contributes. And so now the Indy 500 will have no one in the stands. Now, Matt, I will have to correct you. They will have fans, just not any spectators. I got called out on social media for my post that I put up on Twitter that said, Indy won't have any fans this year. And I had like two guys go, oh, there'll still be fans of the race, just those spectators. I'm like, okay, corrected.
Thank you for that wonderful correction, Internet.
Yeah.
It's going to be I feel like it's probably the smart move safety-wise, but also like a little sad for Simon Pagenaud, who won last year, and it gets his picture on every single ticket sold, and now it's going to be none. And whoever wins this year gets to be like, woohoo, crickets.
Exactly.
You know, like,
we can't give you any milk to drink because, you know, that'd be, we can't have that happen. Can't kiss the trophy girl.
But I don't know. The race goes on, and I'm sure that a lot of the teams and drivers will have opinions about as to what they need to, you know, how they feel about the whole thing. But, you know, it is what it is. There's nothing we can do about it. Like, I don't – even around here, I don't mind going out. You follow the rules. There's some social distancing. You wear a mask. It is what it is.
In a little bit of irony, I was looking on the net, and I saw an article Jamie Meyer, who's now the president of PRI, he had issued that PRI, they're still moving forward, hoping to have the Performance Racing Industry Show in Indianapolis December 10th through the 12th, and that they had just met with the city and everything was looking good. And although Indianapolis is, they've got a 1-5 rating, they're at 4.5 right now, which is like pushing that. You, if it was an RPM, you'd, if you redlined at 5 and you're at 4.5, you know, and it said, but by December, we're hoping everything will be great. And in fact, when we were there, everybody from Indy was meeting with them right before us and had just gotten the green light to have their spectators and everything. Then the next article you click on is Indy won't happen because of, so
yeah,
this is what we talked about, Matt, is that it is a moving target. Guys who put on events are told this week that no, you can't do it. Then, or excuse me, are told you can do it. Sure, if you do all this, then they get all loaded up for it, get ready to go. And by the time the event date actually happens, something's changed, rates have tripled, and now they can't, which is very critical. People never stop to think about the impact to the people that put on these events. Because as you said, Indy already had to print 200,000 tickets or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
They already had to print programs. They've already had, you know, all of this expense was already done that now they can't reap the benefit from. And when you trickle down to smaller events, good guys events, local car shows, things like that, it's real difficult for people.
Yeah, it's, you know, but it's affecting everyone and it's affecting all the events. So we'll see how long this
Fingers
whole thing
crossed that everything goes yeah. and everything keeps moving, because we are seeing, you know, events just continually be canceled. I mean, we're seeing event after event that they said was going to happen and then it can't. So, I mean, when we see events being canceled as far out as like the Rose Parade, you know, I mm-hmm. mean, you know, and CES show, it's interesting. And it's also interesting the innovation that people are to make some events happen, how they're, you know, like the Indy 500, they could have just thrown up their hands and gone, yeah, well, we just won't have it this year. But, they're, you know, they're being innovative. They're figuring out how to do it. Look at NBA, NHL, and, well, Major League Baseball is a whole other one. They're having their issues. But,
they're having their issues, for sure.
They're trying to travel all over the world, or all over the nation. So, anyways, hey, on a good note, do you like are you a fan of the Singer Porsche 911s?
Yeah. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah. I never saw – I've told you the story, and I've never seen – I never saw it coming, okay? When I was involved in that in the very beginning, boy, was I wrong. And but it has trickled down even to other luxury items. And I saw in Departures magazine that there is a London flat that is on the market for $42 million. And for $42 million, you could buy two of Leno's F1 cars, okay? And have a little bit of pocket change left over, maybe. And but this flat was inspired, the design of it was inspired by the Porsche Singer 911. And I thought that was really interesting, because here's a designer that went into this luxury apartment and designed it and used the inspiration of the Porsche 911. Now, it's not like literally a Porsche 911. He took color schemes, leather textures, you know, different things yeah. like that. And I can see it. It is a pretty cool place. I mean, it's quite nice, but it's that trickle down. Cars have become part of culture.
But it's only about 6,000 square feet, which is huge, but for $42 million.
Well, London, you know, London proper is one of the most expensive places in the world for property. And, you know, it's places are expensive. Property is getting very expensive, which is amazing, because you read that millennials don't want to own houses anymore. And they don't want, well, what's going to happen to all these $42 million properties? You're going to be able to scoop them up in 40 years, Matt, for like maybe, I don't know, 50 mil.
Yeah. It's I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to just
wait it out.
I'm going to wait it out.
Walk in there with your cane and go, I'm going to buy this place. So what else you got today? Anything?
Yeah, just on a last note, I don't know. I see it as a bit of good news in the automotive space. I'm not sure if you heard, but a good friend of the show and of CarCast is Jim Farley, the CMO, former CMO, and I think current COO of Ford, has just been announced as the next CEO of that company, of Ford. And Hackett will be stepping down. He'll move to an advisory role. So October 1st will be the official date for Jim Farley to take over. And then I think Hackett stays on until maybe April of the following year as sort of like a handoff role. What we love about Jim Farley is this, he's been at Ford for 10 years. He's been in the industry forever. And he really is just a car guy. I've said this on, I've said this on this show, and I've said it on the other podcast that, we've exchanged a number of emails, and just like he's sending me pictures of his Cobra, of his old Cobra and his GT40, and he raced at Goodwood and Laguna Seca, and just what an enthusiast he is of the cars. And I, you know, not to pick on the old guys, but it's kind of nice to see, I don't know, a 56 or whatever he is, 54, 56, 58 year old guy instead of a 182-year-old guy
take the rounds. Older than us, and, but younger than, you know, like, some of the old guard, yeah.
Hackett was good, and he did a lot of good restructuring at the company. His buddy Hackett. But he was from Steelcase, right? Steelcase is office supplies, high end stuff. It's sort of the snap
metal fabrication office. Was what they started as, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and they sort of became like the Snap-on of office equipment, right? The high-end chairs and cubicles and things
back
like that.
When desks were made of steel.
Yeah. I used some of that stuff back in the day. They had an office in Santa Monica down the street from my office, from my tech company, and it was a showroom of sorts. It was fantastic. But Farley's been a car guy his whole life. He's been in the industry the whole time and really kind of gets it. And there's been a few home runs for sure. I believe it was Farley that had the initial conversations with Matthew McConaughey to bring him into the Lincoln brand. And that was a home run campaign for them. When you take a guy like McConaughey and you put him into these Lincoln commercials, and then it becomes into a pop culture. It's, you know, they're making fun of it on Saturday Night Live, but it's just a huge effective brand. You know, I think that's a huge home run that you can't even put a price tag on that. Well, you can with sales, but you don't. Everybody wants that to happen in a good way, and they managed to make it happen. There was a little bit of foresight there, which I thought was impressive. And this guy's had a lot of roles within the company. And look, I imagine the other thing about Ford is they've been grooming like Henry Ford III to be an important role, to play an important role at this company as well. And he's fantastic, from working at the dealer over at Galpin and various offices to running Ford Performance and Motorsport and everything else. So it was nice that to see some of this news. We like Farley a lot. And I think what you'll find is a lot of veterans in the space that we like, Ralph Gills and Dave Merrick and you know, guys that have also been in the industry for 20, 30 years. I think they'll all endorse the idea of Jim Farley being Ford CEO.
Yeah. Enthusiasts are always good rather than bean counters. And that's cool. One last thing that we didn't even punch on today is that although Monterey's not happening this year, some of the auctions are going virtual. You'll be able to check them out online. I think RM and Gooding have announced they're doing Monterey Week type auctions. Have they not?
Yeah, they have. The Gooding one has been happening as, last week when we did this show. I believe it ends August 7th, Friday, August 7th. It was on the 3rd through the 7th. And then I believe RM has an auction coming up. I'm not sure what's next for Gooding, but it's an all online auction. And what's interesting, Brad, is they secured a large warehouse out here in Southern California and housed all of the cars from the auction in that facility and made it available, you know, by appointment for viewing to some of the buyers,
inspection
and some filming and some PR and some things like that. I haven't had a chance to get over there, but they've extended the invitation very kindly to say, hey, swing by and see the cars. So it's like, oh, which ones? They're like, all of them. Like, that's fantastic. So that's kind of cool as well.
Cool. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up for this week. Where are you headed off to?
We record this a few days early from when it's posted. So I will be, by the time you hear this, I'll be out on the road to Laguna Seca. There's a vintage race. As you said, there's no Rolex Historics this year, but there is something called Driver Appreciation Day. We just got the paperwork in and the run groups. It looks like there's going to be about 160, maybe 180 cars, 8 run groups. And
what cars is Adam taking up there?
He's going to take the Datsun, the different drummer racing, Datsun 510. This is the car that Jim Frewell at Racecraft in Washington restored for us. This is the one we were looking for the wheels for.
Right.
Yeah. We kept talking about the wheels, and I got to tell you, we ended up
putting 22s on it.
So we did. We donked it. So we found 3 of the original wheels, and the 4th wheel in the set had the spokes on the inside, not the spokes going to the edges like we described previously. They were the right size, right offsets, all the deal. All the specs checked in. We sent them out, had them dye tested, and they came back as their magnesium. They came back great. And then we went to the powder coater out here. We used several powder coaters, but there's the one guy that's I don't know if you use Pac Coast, if you use Pacific Coast.
I have no.
But these guys are phenomenal in the powder coating world. They're sort of the EVOD. You know, EVOD is such a great shop to do any little one off. CNC machine stuff, acrylic, metal, all, you know, things like that, all the little bits, door handles. These guys have a way, I don't know how they do this, Brad, maybe you have more insight on this, but there's some sort of like putty that you can use on metal and it can still be powder coated. And I always thought metal had to do it. Maybe there's some sort of metal bits in it or shavings or some way to conduct electricity. And he took the 3 wheels. He took one of the 3 good wheels. He made like foam molds of the spokes. Used that mold and the putty to form the matching spokes on the 4th wheel.
What? Really?
Yeah, because all it is cosmetic.
Yeah. Right?
It's all you need to do is just get that putty out on the edge and finish it, powder coated everything. You cannot tell the difference. You cannot tell. Wait till you see them. I'll send you some pictures.
Yeah, I want to see this because I've never heard of that before. So.
Yeah, it's the guy, like, he did it. He figured it out. And what I love about this guy, Adam called me, and he's like, I got the wheels back. They look good. He goes, but the best part is this guy was so happy with his work. Right. And I go, I love the guys that take pride in their work. He's like, I knew I could do it and I want him to see how. And I was going to make it and shave it down. But I decided to do the mold because I worked on it all weekend, like myself, you know. And then, and he goes, and they're so good. I don't think you're going to tell them. It's like, I just love this guy's enthusiasm and what he did. And we got him. So we got him. We're going to take him to the track.
Cool. I'm interested to know what that process is.
Yeah. So we'll see. And I don't know where we go from there. Maybe we still make a set. We haven't really figured that out yet. If so, we'll be able to see these in person and yeah, we'll scan them and figure out how to,
we'll just make them out of foam and then powder coat them. That's all you have to do.
That's all you got to do. Just hand putty them. Who knew? Yeah. Use a putty.
Play-Doh.
I can't imagine the amount of time and whatever you put into this, but, yeah.
Cool. Now, I want to know about that.
Now, again, it's not load bearing, right? It's not.
Right. It's cosmetic.
Just cosmetic. He just filled in the gaps.
But still,
basically.
A putty that can be powder coated. I'm interested in that, how it adheres and everything like that. So I'll have to check that out.
And the rims with like a deep chip or chunk out of it. That's what they can use to fill it and file it down. And
okay.
I don't know. We'll find out.
All right. Hey everybody! Thanks for listening to Shift and Steer this week. Aaron, you notice he's not here, no giggling, no laughing. And he's out on a tour up through Nevada. I forget what it's called, Nevada 750 or something like that. And he'll be back next week to tell us all about that. And that's about it right now. So, Matt, tell them where they can find us online.
Yeah, check us out at Shift and Steer. And, of course, we're on iTunes and Podcast One. And if you jump on there and give us a nice little rating, a nice comment, we appreciate that. And that's it. Tell a friend.
Tell a friend. Tell a phone.
Tell a friend.
And hey, everybody, don't forget iTunes. Go on there, give us a 5-star rating, and leave a comment. Love us, hate us, leave a comment. We like it either way. It's great. And find me online at Bradley_Fanshaw. On Instagram, everywhere else, it's Brad Fanshaw. And Matt, I think I'm going to have to get rid of this COVID beard. It's going to look like Burl Ives.
You guys can find me at Motorator. I'll be posting some images from the track day and stuff as well, so check that out. Thanks, guys. Cool.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.